The Good GP podcast is excited to have MedTech Global as a sponsor. MedTech is on a mission to digitally transform general practice so GPs can focus on quality patient care. For more information about MedTech Global, visit medtechglobal.com.
You're listening to The Good GP, the podcast for busy GPs.
Hello and welcome to The Good GP, the education podcast for busy GPs. I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the lands upon which we meet. I'm on Whadjuk country, part of the Noongar Nation, and I'll pay my respects to leaders past, present and emerging. Right, today we're talking about a topic that has come to be part of most GPs' work life, telehealth consulting. My guest on the podcast today is Dr. Michael Wright, Chief Medical Officer for Avant Mutual and Chair of RACGP Expert Committee on Funding and Health System Reform. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for speaking with me.
Yeah, look, this is such an interesting topic. Like most GPs, telehealth consulting became a prominent and important part of my work just suddenly during the pandemic. Most of us learnt the ins and outs of telehealth on the job. 3 to 4 years later, what are some of the do's and don'ts of telehealth consulting, Michael?
Great question, Tim. As you say, it came to us all very quickly and we've developed our learnings and rules on the job. But I think there is a lot of clear information now about how to conduct an appropriate telehealth consultation. So I think the Medical Board of Australia has put out some telehealth guidelines as telehealth, and particularly with Medicare, telehealth refers to video and telephone visits. But more broadly, from an event perspective and an insurance perspective, we think telehealth is more broad than that. It's all care that's not provided face-to-face, speaking with a patient in front of you. That includes care that you might provide via email, via text, or using online questionnaires, or sending images. It's broader than just those consultations. So I suppose there are a few things that it's worth talking about. But when it comes down to it, I think probably the first message is to say that what the medical board's guidelines say, where possible, you should treat the standard of care when providing a telehealth consult is pretty much the same as if you provide a face-to-face consult. So I think that's an important thing to bear in mind, is that the standard of care that we should provide is pretty similar. And that can come from things like identifying patients, so making sure that you're speaking to the right patient, consenting the patient just so that they know what might be involved in the telehealth consult. I think they're probably two really important things. You've got to protect privacy. So the fact that you're holding these consultations over the air in many circumstances, you've still got to think about those privacy implications as much as you would in your own surgery in a face-to-face consult. And then I think the other sort of important thing to think about is we know that telehealth has its limitations, and particularly as GPs, we just need to know, when do we need something more than what's provided in a telehealth consult? When do we need more information? When do we need to progress to a face-to-face consult? When is a telehealth consult no longer appropriate? And I suppose that's one of the lessons that we've all been learning during the pandemic, is when is telehealth not working and how do we successfully convert to a face-to-face consult?
Great. Just like GPs are learning about telehealth, Michael, Medicare and the MBS are certainly learning and adjusting expectations for telehealth. What advice can you give GPs about remaining compliant with Medicare and staying within the requirements of the MBS?
Yep, great question, Tim. Look, I think, as you say, as much as we've been learning, Medicare has adapted and there have been a lot of changes to the regulations around MBS telehealth. As I mentioned, so the MBS-funded video and phone items were introduced on a temporary basis at the start of the COVID pandemic, but they've now been made permanent. So video and phone services are available for medical practitioners in general practice, specialist nurse practitioners, midwives, allied health providers, and dental practitioners. So really broadly available. But one thing that GPs do need to remember is that it remains a legislative requirement that medical practitioners working in general practice can only perform an MBS-funded telehealth where they have an existing established clinical relationship with the patient. Now, with limited exemptions, and I'll explain to them, and there are a number of exemptions, but we do need to recognise that you are supposed to have seen a patient in person within the previous 12 months to show that you have that established clinical relationship. I suppose they've recently changed who are exempt, and from the 1st of January 2024, people who are seeking advice about sexual reproductive health and bloodborne virus information. There's a temporary exemption till 30 June. As I mentioned, it's important for GPs to know they need to have an established clinical relationship with the patient, and they should have seen them in person in the past 12 months in order for the patient to be eligible for an MBS-funded telehealth attendance. Now, that established clinical relationship rule doesn't apply to children under 12 months of age, people who are homeless, people receiving an urgent after-hours service, patients of Aboriginal medical services or Aboriginal community-controlled health services, people who are living in a natural disaster area, or people isolating because of COVID. A number of long-term exemptions. And then there are some temporary exemptions as well, which GPs should check and make sure that they're still valid. But from the 1st of January 2024, there are some temporary exemptions around treatment of people with bloodborne viruses, sexual health consultations, pregnancy counselling services, and mental health services. So at present, those people are also excluded from that 12-month rule.
Yeah. I suppose the place that most GPs perhaps get tripped up is just when patients are just outside the 12 months of consulting time. And so it's really checking for that in advance so that the patient knows whether they're eligible for a rebate. So I suppose the place where GPs sort of come a cropple with Medicare is when patients are just beyond the 12 months of consulting with their last telehealth.
Yep. No, I think that's a real challenge because the regulations about the existing clinical relationship are fairly clear. So if they are beyond that 12 months, then they won't qualify for another MBS-funded telehealth until you've had another face-to-face consult with them.
Mm-hmm.
Except, of course, in those number of exemptions, where there are those number of existing exemptions. So it's worthwhile for GPs to check maybe if one of those exemptions apply.
Yeah, and certainly having your admin team look at it before patients get booked in so that they don't go through the difficulty of it all really helps.
And I think that's one of the challenges too of when we talk about consenting people for telehealth is also just making sure that patients do understand how the payment for the consult is going to come about. And that may be the appropriate time to discuss that Medicare rule if your staff haven't done that with them previously.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. You know, this is all part of perhaps the disorganisation of how telehealth evolved, that we just think of it as just getting on the phone and talking to patients or getting on a video, but there's just a lot of administration that sits in the background that has become really burdensome for practices.
Yeah, look, there's just a lot of legislation underpinning it, and practices do, and GPs really do need to be aware of what those limitations are in terms of its access so that we can manage it as efficiently as possible. I think one of the points you make, I was just going to mention, I think you do make a good point, though, that does add to the stress of running your day-to-day care. And I think it's important for GPs to treat telehealth appointments as they do face-to-face appointments and have dedicated appointment times rather than just sort of ad hoc phone calls. Because I think by treating it as a full consultation, you're probably more aware of what all those regulations are, and it's easier to comply. It's also easier then to shift from a telephone visit to potentially a face-to-face one.
Yeah, I'd really strongly agree with that. And I think that was perhaps part of the messiness again of how telehealth evolved, that when it first started, we were all sort of, a lot of us were just out of work basically because patients suddenly dried up in face-to-face consulting, and then we had to get in touch with a lot of patients and it lost a bit of the organisation to begin with. But my experience is that patients really do want organised telehealth, and they have the same expectations around the organisation for an appointment they do for telehealth.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's right. And as I've said before, I think the medical board's expectations is that the quality of care that you provide during a telehealth should be the same as a face-to-face. So I think it's a good message to follow up.
Now, you work for Avant, Michael, and I guess you see a lot of the complaints and issues that come from telehealth. What are some of the common complaints that you see with regard to telehealth consulting, and what do you think GPs can do to help protect themselves from issues with regard to telehealth consulting?
I think originally when telehealth came, as you've said already, Tim, we weren't quite sure what problems would emerge, but I think increasingly there were complaints where patients felt they should have had a telehealth appointment rather than a face-to-face consult. Or conversely, they wanted a face-to-face consult and got a telehealth consult. Doctors asking to shift from having a telehealth consult to a face-to-face are all areas where patients were potentially dissatisfied.
And I think we at that early stage weren't experienced in knowing how to convert more successfully. So I think one of the challenges with telehealth consults too is that you have access to less information, in that often you can't physically examine a patient. And so that means that potentially you've got less information which might help make your diagnosis. So I think increasingly GPs are becoming aware of that and are getting better at speaking confidently with patients about saying we should convert to a face-to-face consult. Whereas I think earlier on with telehealth, our understanding of what the limitations were and also our comfort in explaining that to patients might not have been as clear, and potentially that was a source for some of these complaints.
Yeah.
But increasingly telehealth is just embedded within our standard of care, and I think it is a really important service that we can offer our patients. It can provide really safe care, but it augments what we do in our face-to-face consult. It's not a complete replacement for it. And we just need to be aware of what its limitations are and also make our patients aware.
Yeah, and I mean, the other side of things, and I know Avant's really concerned about member well-being. Telehealth, if you're just doing it all day, every day, it takes a real toll on your sort of focus and mental well-being and emotional well-being. It's quite stressful and difficult.
Yeah, look, it is pretty draining. And that's why I think the whole idea that you actually treat them as proper appointments, you don't just try and fit them in as ad hoc. One of the ideas that some practices have is they'll have one doctor who does more of the telehealth work, and then the others do the routine face-to-face work. So that way you can break up the burden of the telehealth visits, having a set period where you provide the telehealth calls. So often that's what I do in my practices. I just have a set time where, if I can at all possible, try and do the telehealth appointments within a set period of time, because it's a different shift in the way you manage the transition between the consults. Whereas if I was to do a face-to-face, then a telehealth, and then backwards and forwards repeatedly, there's a bit more of cognitive pressure on that. And it's also a bit inefficient, even that handover. It's improved as our billing systems have caught up with providing telehealth, but still there are some problems. I think a couple of other ways we can reduce the burden for our doctors is ensuring that our support staff are checking for MBS eligibility so that we make sure that people are eligible for telehealth before they start the appointment. And then I think the other bit that we can do to try and reduce our burden is knowing when to transition and just having the confidence to say no to our patients when a telehealth appointment isn't the right thing. Yeah. So we just need to be mindful that they're very convenient, but convenience shouldn't come at the expense of quality or safety.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I suppose from a GP point of view, particularly with burnout, I mean, it's important to take a break. We've all got a limit to how many people we can deal with in a day. And please try and take some time out to reflect and just slow down where you can.
Yeah, I think one of the issues with telehealth is you might be at, a lot of doctors will be at home all day telehealth consulting, and they don't get the benefit of, say, having a cuppa with their colleagues or speaking to the admin team and letting them know, hey, this has been a really heavy session and so forth. And factoring that in perhaps and trying to find time for connectedness, I think, is really important.
I couldn't agree more.
So telehealth has sort of opened some unexpected consequences. One of them is that now patients are accessing us from outside of Australia. Usually that's known to the doctor at the time, but sometimes it may not be. Where do GPs stand if patients are seeking advice from outside of Australia? And then from the other side, what happens when a doctor travels outside Australia and, say, still needs to provide telehealth services to their patients?
Interesting question. I mean, I think it's important to say that it probably depends on the nature of the consult as to whether this telehealth is appropriate still. So particularly if you've got a regular patient or a regular doctor and you're having some follow-up with telehealth, then that may be appropriate even if the patient isn't in the country. But if they're not in the country, you can't bill Medicare. So I suppose that's an important thing. You're not meeting the Medicare requirements. And then you've also got to factor in if someone's calling for a telehealth appointment, you can't perform an examination, you can't write scripts for someone who's overseas or request any tests. So it may be completely inappropriate. But there may come times when you do just want to share an update with patients or follow up some results. With Avant, we do provide cover if a patient's traveling overseas, if you've got a pre-existing clinical relationship with that patient, and if they've been outside less than 90 days, outside of Australia for less than 90 days, then the care that you provide under a telehealth appointment will be covered by us as your medical indemnity insurer. But as I said, you won't be eligible for a Medicare rebate if the patient's not in Australia. And then I suppose in the reverse situation, so if a GP is traveling, if there's a pre-existing clinical relationship with the patient, and as a GP, I've been outside of Australia, but less than 120 days within the year, and the patient's in Australia, then we'll also cover you, your medical indemnity insurance will cover you for providing that care, even though you're out of the country. But once again, you'll have to also check if you're out of the country, you also need to check, do you have to be registered in that jurisdiction in order to practice? So if you are providing telehealth when you're out of the country, you may not be eligible to provide any care. So that's an important consideration as well.
And just to hone in on MBS, can you still bill the NBS if you're outside of Australia?
No, both you and the patient need to be in Australia. Yeah. And I suppose the point to say is, look, in those circumstances, although Medicare doesn't cover you for providing it, potentially it's a good opportunity to provide some simple continuity of care, even if Medicare doesn't fund it. But as I said, for in terms of the Avant policy, you would be covered if in limited circumstances if you have a pre-existing relationship.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem here, and I mean, this is just a fascinating area to me, Michael, but part of the problem is that in this era, because the work can follow us home and follow us on holidays and follow us everywhere, it's often quite tempting, rather than handing over to a colleague in the practice, just to say, oh, I'll just follow that result up, or I'll just call that patient, or I'll just message that patient. And it makes us sort of go into sort of blurry lines, basically, very easily, because just a quick phone call can turn into so many other things so easily, and you're outside of your scope. So, you know, I think my concern here is that in days gone by, we would, if you went away on holiday, for example, in practices I worked in, we'd have arrangements. Hey, this person's covering you for whilst you're away. And in this environment, it's just blurrier and messier, and a lot of GPs perhaps don't segregate that time.
Look, I think that boundary issue you mentioned is really important, and that we do have to have a work-life balance, and that does mean having time away from work. And so if you are on holidays, our advice would be please make sure that you do have a holiday, you've handed over your care to someone else. I think really this point about if you are overseas is more if you felt the need to provide some care, and it might be in the benefit of continuity of care, but just recognise the limitations of telehealth, but know particularly from that there is some coverage available depending on the exact circumstances of the care.
Yeah. And look, last question, Michael. Telehealth consulting, you mentioned this at the introduction, it's brought into play a number of other forms of communication, and I'm talking about SMS, electronic messaging, email, to consult with and provide information and interact with our patients. What do GPs need to consider when they're using these other sort of asynchronous forms of communication to consult and provide information to patients?
Look, I think a lot of the rules are similar as with what we might call the MBS telehealth or video and telephone, that it's important to make sure that you know that you're communicating with who you think you're communicating. So making sure you identify the person. It's important to have some consent so that someone, you might have a patient who agrees to have their results emailed to them. Now you need to make sure that you have the right email. You need to make sure that the patient has consented to have that information shared via email. And then, so it's important that privacy issues met. And a bit like what I mentioned before, it's important to understand these boundaries of where it's appropriate and where it might not be appropriate to share that information. It may be better to escalate at least to a telephone or video consult, or better still, a face-to-face consult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, an example that I've heard of and encountered is that people may not realise their email might not just be accessible to them. It might be that the emails are actually accessible to their employer or so forth. So there's these sort of unintended sort of consequences that people aren't even aware of. If you're using a work email address, you may not be aware that the owner of your business or your employer has the right to actually peruse those emails, for example.
Look, exactly. And so I think that's a real consideration for particularly patients who do need to be aware of, if they are having that type of care, that you know, they need to think about their own privacy as much as we are. We've actually produced a number of guidelines for Avant, and I'm sure the other medical indemnity providers have as well, but around conducting telehealth consults, conducting digital health consultations, and what you need to know. And so a lot of those, they're available to all doctors, not just members.
Yeah. And look, the other consideration is very often the data we have on people's contact details is incorrect. Although the patient says, can I message it to you or email it to you? And they consent, you've sent it to the wrong person.
Yeah. And look, I think a good tip and something I always do if ever I am talking to a patient about following up their results is I confirm the contact number, I confirm the email, I confirm the address, and it's a surprising or not surprising the number of times that information is out of date, but I make a note that I've checked it in the consultation notes.
Yeah. Well, Mike, that's a fascinating discussion. And I would say, actually, on reflection, because you and I have both been talking about this, despite all these sort of glitches we've talked about with telehealth, GPs in Australia have done an amazing job in adopting telehealth as a sort of modality and flourishing and thriving in it. And there's just lots of learnings and lots to be acknowledged and congratulated amongst our colleagues.
I couldn't agree more, Tim. Telehealth came with a bang, with a real rush to our practices. The practices we've adapted to integrate it within the care. I think we've worked out where it's more appropriate, where it's less appropriate. And I think we're getting a lot better at understanding when it's better to convert to a face-to-face visit, when telehealth's great. But taking it, what should we say, through our day-to-day learnings, we're just getting more experienced and more comfortable in providing telehealth. And I think the regulators are understanding where it fits in better too. So the medical board does have a lot of information about telehealth guidelines. It's really useful advice for GPs if you're not sure what you ideally should and shouldn't be doing, that's a great place to look as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, thanks so much for talking to us today. We appreciate your time and thanks for joining the podcast.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for listening to the Good GP Podcast, a proud member of the Talking Health Tech Podcast Network. Make sure you're subscribed on your favourite podcast player so you don't miss an episode. If you have any questions or would like to contact the Good GP, send an email to thegoodgp@gmail.com. The content of this podcast represents the opinions of the Good GP, hosts and guests of the show. The content is aimed at general practitioners working in the Australian context and is not intended to represent medical advice. Any listeners experiencing symptoms or who have concerns about their health should seek advice from a registered health professional. We make every effort to ensure that the information shared is accurate and up to date at the time of recording, but welcome any feedback or corrections. The content of this podcast is general in nature and does not refer to specific patient management. We recommend all health professionals review local and up-to-date guidelines prior to any clinical decisions.